Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we speak with writers about writing. And sometimes I meet somebody for the very first time, and I feel like I've known them forever. And I'm feeling like that right now with my guest today. Today I have Lauren J.A. Bear. How are you doing, Lauren?
It's so mutual, Sean. Yeah, it is great to be here. I'm thrilled to talk about writing and reading with the people who also love it as much as I do.
Absolutely. So we sometimes, well, normally we do a little pre-chat before we start getting to the episode. And I feel like I've known you for a really long time. And so we just have a lot in common. You're very sweet and funny. So I think this is going to be a really fun chat. Lauren, just got a brief intro. Lauren was born in Boston and raised in Long Beach. After studying English at UCLA and education at LMU, she taught middle school humanities for over a decade and survived. And we were chatting about that before, and it's hilarious. She is a teaching fellow for the Holocaust Center for Humanity, lives in Seattle with her husband and three young children, who, by the way, are all getting ready for camp right now behind her because it's 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'm very impressed that she's even here. She likes crossword puzzles and being on or near the water without getting wet. So welcome to the show, Lauren. And we are here to talk about your new book. Please tell us what the book is and what it's about.
Yes, my debut novel is called Medusa's Sisters. It's a very direct title. It is about Medusa's sisters. The Steno and Euryale, most people have never heard their names before, who loved Medusa, who were cursed beside her. So yes, it reclaims their narrative and gives them some power. And it comes out on August 8th.
Yay. And it's your debut. I thought you had other books out. I did not know that. So congratulations on your debut. That is amazing. I'm so happy for you and proud of you for
Thank
getting
you
that done.
So much.
That's huge. It's a huge thing to get a book written, to get a book sold, to get an agent, to get a publishing deal, all that stuff. It's just like, it's not like, oh, I wrote a book, here it is. You know, it's a giant thing. So it's something to be really celebrated. And I'm really happy for you.
It is. And it's a multi-year process. And like, as a lifelong avid reader, it's been wild to see how the sausage is made and, you know, come back and see this other perspective in the lifeline of a book.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a process, and it's a team of, you know, hundreds of people that are getting this done. So your little brain is doing all the, you know, the hard writing work in the beginning, and then it gets taken into this other world. And that's what, you know, we do talk about a lot of craft and business of publishing on the show. So I need to talk to you about this book. It's a beautiful book. It's interesting. And I love this quote that you have in your author note. It says, "The woman with the snake hair has become arguably the most iconic image of the femme fatale, but nobody is born evil. Monsters are made." And I think that line can be applied to so many things in life, but I want to know why you wrote that. What was your inspiration to sit down and write this story in the lens of that statement that you made?
Right. I think humans in general are really fascinated with the villain, right? And the conception of evil, the formation of evil. We see it. I mean, there's a thirst, a hunger for counter narratives, right? In finding out the villain's journey. And I was talking about this actually with my 5-year-old about why people would write about the bad guy, because that's kind of wild for a 5-year-old, right? Why the bad guy? And she and I were talking, and she kind of got to the point where she's like, well, I guess it's like if someone robbed you, but then you found out why they needed to rob you, maybe it would feel different. And I said, exactly right. It doesn't make them robbing you any less horrible, right? But maybe you have empathy for them. Maybe you have compassion for them. And I think that's the point of literature, hopefully, is to find compassion for others.
Wow, that's so profound that she would come up with that. And that's, I love that. I love that she thought that through. And that makes a lot of sense because, you know, like you say, not everyone, you know, no one is born evil. I mean, that's all sort of acquired terribleness that we put on ourselves and our children. But it sounds like you're doing a good job, Mom, there. That's good.
You know, as a mom, you have good days and then you have a lot of bad days, but you try to focus on the silver golden moments.
Yeah, we're not telling stories about how we dropped them off at school and forgot their lunch or their computer or anything like that. These are the good moments that we're sharing on the show. Oh yeah, and then I yelled at them and I got home. No, I didn't do that.
Never. I've never raised my voice.
That's good. I don't either. I'm more I'll get you back in other ways. I'm not a yeller. I'll figure out a better way to get back because I am a woman. That's how we do. All right. So you talked about Medusa and her sisters, which I have to admit that I didn't know this legend. I did not know it. So I'm so excited. I'm learning this from you. Something maybe I should have known because I love that movie, the Harry Hamlin movie back when I was a kid, the Clash of the Titans. I love that. Titans, the original one. It was super cheesy now, but I was aware of her, obviously. So why do you think myths and legends still resonate with modern readers? And why did you decide to immerse yourself into this world?
Myths are, first and foremost, myths are so fun. You know, they've got a little bit of everything extreme in them. Like all of the extreme human interactions and emotions are there. There's jealousy and rage and sex and violence and like really hunky guys and really gorgeous girls. So like there's that. But on top of that, I think myths speak to our collective humanity in a way. Like they have become the imagery and the symbolism that almost like reverberates or something in our DNA. Like it's just something we're almost born with that we seek these images and these moments from stories. And I think that when I read myths, in a way, I feel like I'm connecting with the people of the past, right? When we read myths, we learn about the people that came before us, but then also I would argue that the way we react to those stories tells us something about who we are now. Mm-hmm. And so I think myths have like a dual purpose in that sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just, so I guess I was thinking, these are all things that were sort of like downloaded to us as when we're humans, like, okay, these are the stories. Okay. These are the main stories that we all know. And then we sort of branch out from there. And it's interesting to me how we keep revisiting these same, every generation revisits these same myths and stories. It's interesting to me.
And there are a lot of these images or basic stories are so cross-cultural too. You know, like how many mythologies have a flood story or, you know, an apple story? Like they really do connect people more than they divide people. And I'm so into anything that brings people together right now.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's a good point. I love that. And books do, I think, you know, the art of fiction, it's not just for books to enlighten us and bring us together as people too and human beings. And that's why I think it's important. It's not just entertainment. It's important work what we do, I think, especially what you're doing. question number three. We're already at number three. I can't even believe it.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I know. It goes fast. Do you have a favorite character in this book? And if so, maybe one of them was easier to write than others? Let us know what the characters are like and which one you sort of connected with or didn't connect with.
I will pronounce their names because like all my girlfriends who've seen copies of the book are like, Lauren, we have no idea how to say any of your characters' names. I didn't create, you know, the main characters' names. Those are the ones I found in the mythological record. Like I had to stay true to them. So the older sister, her name is Steno, and the middle sister is Eurylee. So if any of you pick up the book, that's how you can say the names in your head. And then the youngest, the baby, is Medusa. So Steno is the older sister. I'm an older sister. Like almost intrinsically, I can relate to that role in the family dynamic. And I gave Steno the first person narration because of that. Eurylee is the middle sister. She's less accessible. So she's a third person narration. She's a little more prickly. I'm sure some people will struggle to like her. I happen to love her, but she makes decisions that might be harder for readers to support, which is real life, right? I think on the outside, maybe I'm Steno, but on the inside, I think I'm a little more like Eurylee than I would like to admit.
That's good. Well, I'm the older sister too. And I'm just wondering why I feel so connected to you, but we have all these little things in common, but there is a different, the hierarchy in the family, there's a difference when you're the oldest one. It's just, you get in trouble way more often because the other one's messing up and then it's always your fault. That kind of thing. So, but it's, and you're the advisor and you're the protector, you know, in school, you're all these different kind of roles that the baby maybe, or, and definitely not the middle sister would have, you know? So that's fascinating.
It's so true. And I mean, when you're a writer, you know this, you're an observer. And so you watch dynamics, you watch family dynamics, relationship dynamics. And like, even in my own children, with my three children, there's some rage in the middle one. You know, I see it over and over again. And we were talking about teaching earlier. One of my favorite icebreakers to do with my class, and this is actually an icebreaker you could use in any situation, I think, is to have people divide up based on where they are in their family's birth order. Like, are you the oldest kid, the middle kid, the youngest, or are you an only child? And give people, you know, 5 to 10 minutes to come up with commonalities. It's really fun. And it's shocking what you'll find out from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have an only child. I have one son. So he's like, whole other experience than anyone else is having, because we all get these huge families and lots of kids. And I know, you know, my mom said, like, no one got, you know, they're all like, we never got enough attention because there were way too many of us. But I think they all got individual attention, but it doesn't feel like that at the time. But yeah, it is fascinating. And I like how you pulled from that and injected that into your characters. Awesome.
Thank you.
So there's a feminine, you're a mom, you're a sister, you're a daughter, you're a woman. There is a feminist bent to this novel, and you don't shy away from abuse and other wrongs against women. There's a content warning I saw a couple of places, but did you set out with that kind of those storytelling themes in mind? Did you plan this out? Did you map the book? Did you write it organically? How did this work?
You know, the idea came to me when I was nursing my middle child, who I've talked about, my daughter. And honestly, I'll admit it, it came from a Google search of the Gorgons, because it was the middle of the night and I was tired and like the weirdest things were coming through my brain. I was so sleep deprived. And I had this thought, I think from teaching middle school humanities, you know, it must have been percolating in my brain somewhere about, you know, just the mythology characters that I had last been teaching my students. But Medusa was a Gorgon, but here I am, I've studied mythology for years. I have no clue who the other Gorgons were. Like, have the other Gorgons ever shown up in a story, Lauren? So I'm on my phone over my little baby's head on Wikipedia, I'll admit it. And in the Gorgon entry on Wikipedia, there's this, it ended up being a very influential quote to me, but it's awful, of a classical scholar from the 19th century who says that the other Gorgons don't matter. They're appendages. Medusa matters. And I don't think any human, but definitely any woman holding her daughter wants to hear that a woman is an appendage to anyone, mm-hmm. right? So that's when I began researching the Gorgon story. I didn't know when I was younger and reading these stories that there was sexual violence and a rape that resulted in Medusa becoming a Gorgon. That was something that I learned as an adult doing this work. I just knew she was the bad guy who got her head chopped off by Perseus. That's all I knew. And I think that's probably what most people know. Mm-hmm. But this story was there. It's in Hesiod and Homer and Apollodorus. Like, Medusa was a victim of a horrific, violent act, and she and her sisters were cursed afterwards.
Yeah, but it's always blame the victim kind of thing. That's still the thing, you know.
Absolutely. And it's timeless, unfortunately. And so I do hope reading this book, I'm glad content warnings are going out, because I'm sure it can be triggering for some readers. I mean, and then I hope maybe there's an opportunity for some kind of catharsis, if that's possible. I'm not sure. Nothing else, compassion.
Yeah, I love that. And that seems to be a very important theme for you. It comes up when you're speaking about different things. It seems like you're very, and maybe it's all your time in the classroom, spending time with these minds that you're forming, and, you know, noticing compassion in other people and empathy and in younger people is like, it's hope for tomorrow. That's what I always think, hope for tomorrow, you know?
I've done a lot of work. I was a teaching fellow for the Holocaust Center for Humanity, and done a lot of work in how do we teach kids about genocide, which is such a complicated lesson. And what you hope to take away from it is that kids gain empathy and compassion for others, right? Whatever other means to them. But this is not an easy lesson. How do you teach empathy? How do you teach compassion? I don't know that you can. I think that you have to model it, and you have to expose children and readers and humans, all of us, not just children. I rescind that word. Just humans in general need to be exposed to as many different kinds of stories, as many different kinds of human situations as possible. Like that's our only hope, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you know, it's one thing to have compassion, which is the main element, but there's also, I think, when you're speaking about these genocides and these other horrible atrocities that happen even kind of recently in our own country, it's that mob mentality too. It's like, you can have compassion as an individual, but you also have to have the strength to stand up to other people and say, we're not doing this. Like, you know, let's not do this, everybody. And, you know, I might get shot in the face if I say, let's not do this. But, you know, you have to have, I think, the combination of those strength and compassion at the same time to even make a dent in these horrible things that maybe shouldn't be, they definitely shouldn't be happening. But yeah, so thank you for that work. It seems like you're very tied into this compassion work. This is your next novel will be about all about compassion.
I hope it's the theme always, you know, and going back to what you just said, Sean, about almost being an upstander, right? Like not a bystander, an upstander, is finding voice. And that goes back to Medusa's sisters too, because for Steno, what's really hard for her is finding her voice, because she identifies herself more by her sisters than as her own individual person. And I think that's also part of reclaiming myths, is giving women in antiquity agency. And that's why people like these stories, and that's why we keep seeking them out, I think.
Yeah. And it, you know, we can get real philosophical about it and say, you know, if you're diluting or muting 50% of the population's voice about things, you're already cutting your compassion and upstanding in half or more. And then you got to rely on the other half to do the things that probably maybe that muted half would be a little bit better at, you know, that kind of, you know, that's a whole thing. Let's start a class. Let's start a class. And we're going to teach everyone how to be the right way. Let's do that.
Yeah. Let's change the world. Let's go. I've had one cup of coffee. I'm almost ready to change the world.
Right. Poor Lord. I got to let everyone know the publicist scheduled this, and it's super early for her. And she's up getting her kids ready for everything and talking with us. And I feel so honored that I have this time with you, because it is early for you. It is early.
All parents out there will relate. Sometimes it's nice to have an excuse to sneak away in the morning chaos. You know, yes. I'm not up, my husband's upstairs, you know, buttering bagels, and I got to sneak away for a minute.
That's nice too. That is good. That other half, they do some stuff. That's good. Okay. So we talked about what you hope readers to take away from the book. What is your next project? Are you going to be doing, are you just going to stay in the mythological world, or what hope to do next? We're so excited.
Thank you. I am excited for the next project. I'm staying in antiquity with my girls, but I am moving across the sea. So I'm not doing Greece again. I'm actually in ancient Rome, but it's Rome before it was Rome. I'm doing Rea Silvia, who was the mother of Romulus and Remus.
Oh, cool.
Very few people have heard of Rea Silvia, but, you know, more people have a collective understanding of Romulus and Remus and the twins, and they fight over the hill and where are they going to build their big city. So this is their mother. And kind of the same thing as last time, the more I dug into the primary sources, the more questions I had and the more fun I got to have with my own imagination and filling in the blanks. I'm really excited about it. And it should be coming out in 2024.
That's awesome. So you are going to, you know, in a way, you're going to be still kind of, you're going to become known for this will be your thing. Like, I'm going to highlight lesser known antiquity, you know, folks, and that'll be your niche. Don't tell anybody else, because I'll be doing it too.
Yeah. And then we'll see where I go from there. I mean, there's plenty of forgotten female characters that deserve their time in the light, I think.
Oh yeah. You're not going to have any shortage of material. I mean, trust me.
It'll be fine. I've been doing this for 500 years. So.
And then they'll be reading your books like in 30, 40 years. Like, oh, these are the retold myths, and they'll be in classrooms and stuff. It'll be awesome. So well, you did great on the questions. Thank you for being here and answering my very, very difficult questions about the book. What are you, this is your debut. What are you doing to celebrate? Are you going out on tour? Are you having a party? What's going on?
Thank you. So it's in 6 days, which is slightly terrifying, August 8th, University Bookstore at the UW, I live in Seattle, is hosting my launch. So I am like shamelessly, like I'm almost at the point where I'm like going door to door in Seattle and just knocking on people like, come to my book launch. It's going to be really fun. There'll be cookies. And then afterwards, I plan on drinking a copious amount of champagne.
Mm. Well, I know about that. That'll be fun. Have all the champagne, put the kids to bed early and party the night away. It'll be really fun. Well, I'm so happy for you. I'm so proud of you for writing this book. I mean, it's a beautiful book. It's telling a really important stories. I love that. Thank you for bringing this to us. And thank you for being on the show and talking about it with us today.
I just had a blast. What a great start to my day.
Oh, good.
We're besties now.
Yeah. You can just pretend like we'll just keep talking and then you'll be like, oh, it went really long. And then you guys you got to go take them to camp. I can't do it. So
yeah, I can't do lunches either. Sorry.
This is what happens when you have a celebrity wife. You have to, you know, accommodate. He'll get used to it. Well, yeah. Thank you. You're a joy to chat with. It was so nice to have you on the show and I hope to see you again. Please come back with the next book.
I'm planning on it. I'm putting it in the calendar now.
Oh, you're the best. Have a great rest of your day and great tour.
Thank you.